Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. Welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast. This is James Kovacic broadcasting live from the SMRP conference, welcoming Sean and Nate from Pinnacle Art. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi. Hey, James. Thanks for having us.
So, gentlemen, can you introduce yourselves, starting with Nate? Nate, what is Pinnacle Art? What do you do? Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for having us on the show. Nathaniel Ince. I went to Texas A&M University, GIGM, graduated in 2007, and started at Pinnacle. Back then, Pinnacle was basically a fledgling of a company, about 5 to 10 people, and we really cut our teeth in the mechanical integrity space, building MI strategies on fixed equipment, and then we then got into inspection in 2011, doing inspection on fixed assets. And then we got into the non-fixed space and reliability and maintenance space in about 2014. And so ever since then, really the name of the game for us has been we make sure customers, you know, it could be continuous processing facilities, discrete manufacturing plants, are looking at the right data to make the right strategies to then make the right reliability decisions. And so the big challenge that we're solving is there's tons of data out there from design files, maintenance files, history, you know, real-time process data coming in. And a lot of times clients are saying, how do I use that data effectively? We at Pinnacle help them make sure they're looking at the right data to make the right decisions. So that's kind of Pinnacle in a nutshell. We're about 1,000 people now, headquartered in Houston, but do work all over the world.
All right, excellent.
Yeah.
And Sean?
Yeah, quick intro. My name is Sean Rozier. I've been with Pinnacle now a couple years. Graduated from Clemson University in mechanical engineering. I've been in the operation and maintenance space now for about 25 years. Started out my career on the operator side. Held a number of positions through maintenance manager, operations manager, and different roles, and have been implementing reliability and mechanical integrity programs now for about 15 years.
All right, excellent. So, gentlemen, what we're here to talk about today is data, and everyone's talking about data in maintenance and reliability, mm-hmm. the importance of good quality master data, process data, we got predictive data. We're trying to use all this to come up with, you know, predictive models or prescriptive models to tell us when to do maintenance and all these other things. But let's start off at the very basics. What is data that we're looking at? Is it just predictive maintenance? Is it process data? How are we getting it in a structured way? You know, all those basic things.
Let me start and then Sean can fill in the gaps. Literally just talking to somebody who runs or oversees reliability at, you know, over 30 plants globally. And he was saying, man, I have a major issue with KPIs at the leadership level. And the issue that I heard was it wasn't that he didn't have good KPI charts, it was that all the data that feeds up to those KPI charts is he can't trust them, right? And it's not standardized between the plants. And at the end of the day, that's what we want as managers and leaders of these facilities and reliability leaders is at the click of a button, I want to know how my plants are performing and am I focused on the right things? Am I focusing my dollars in the right places? And so it's that underlying data that's pivotal, right? And it can be overwhelming because there's so much of it. And so it's where do we focus? Is there design data, or master data, or process data, real-time data? So we can talk more about that as kind of the interview continues.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you know, and looking at, just like Nate was saying, you know, it's not just around what kind of data you get, it's getting the right data from that point, you know. So back to your question, you know, is it process data? Is it, you know, predictive data? Yeah, it's all of it with that point. Say, but it's what, how do you put all this together so we really see what's really going on with your different assets, right? Mm-hmm. So when we go out and we look at different facilities and different companies and whatnot stuff, you know, we see that they're gathering all this data, they're getting all these things in, and it's really been a big push the last couple of years to really see how do you gather all this data. But what you find out, about 90% of it really doesn't make a difference about how you do things out in the plant from an asset reliability aspect, right? So what we do with this is that we look around of that 5 to 10% of data you really need, what is really needed there that really influences how your reliability programs are going to be effective out in the plants. So that's where we're really where we focus from.
All right, excellent. Yeah, I know some organizations, they just go collect all the data they can because it's easy. Mm-hmm. They don't understand what they're trying to solve first and then work backwards to understand what data do they need to sort that out, right? And, you know, even the foundational elements, which I'm sure we'll talk about, like hierarchy. They don't even know what assets they have, but yet they're collecting all this data and they can't even link it to an asset.
That's right.
So where do people start when they really want to move to a data-driven decision-making process? Where do they start?
That's a great point. I think you kind of hit on it just then. One of the biggest things we'll see is to start a program, hey, what assets do you have in the field? What's live? A lot of plants, maybe all of them, don't have a perfect hold on that. And so the first thing is, hey, we're going to look at your P&IDs, we're going to look at your core systems, and make sure that your master asset list is corroborated between those systems. That can be field walkdowns, it can be reviewing your P&IDs, and then reviewing all your exports from your systems, and kind of lining up those three and getting validation from key leadership in the plant. That's step one, right? And a lot of times people want to start at, well, that's not sexy, that's not cool, but if you don't get that in place, who cares,
yep.
right?
So. Yeah, no, and even going from that part with the stuff, you know, I can tell you just some examples with it there around walking down equipment from this point, you know. It's really amazing to me that places that you go through and you see them have a SEMA mess that's implemented and is up and running with it, but when you start really looking at sampling of what their data, what's inside it with, you see the big gaps inside of that, you know, for instance, like they might not have a new unit come in, but they really didn't capture all their data, so it didn't get uploaded to the CMMS correctly, so now it's not recognizing that something's out in the field from that point. So it makes it very difficult. So. Gathering that data with it there, and really knowing also the other aspect of around, you know, whenever an initiative really starts getting going with it there, you know, sitting down and taking the time to really plan out what the program's going to look like. You know, I always say that with it, that, you know, before I even go start out with something, I want to sit down, I want to know what it looks like before I even go start gather the first amount of data. Because time and time again, we see a lot of organizations in different companies that they say, okay, we're going to put a reliability program in place, right? Well, the first thing, I've got to go get my equipment list in place, right? So everybody gets excited to go out in the field there with it. They start gathering all this data, and now you're about 4 weeks into this, and it's like, oh, man, I wish we could have caught this, right? But because I didn't really plan well at the beginning of this thing. So now I've either got to go back and go get it, or I've got a gap already, okay?
Yep.
So getting that lined out beginning before you even start the first aspect of it is really key for the whole thing to make it successful.
All right, so, you know, we got to start with that foundational data,
mm-hmm.
you know, asset hierarchy, having a good asset list, you know, making sure it matches to the P&IDs, you know, and if we don't have that, that's the starting point.
Yep.
All right, excellent. Now, once we got that starting point, there's lots of talk out there about digital twins and all this other stuff. What is a digital twin, and how does that fit in with what people are already kind of doing with their CMMS?
Yeah, great question. Digital twin side, a lot of times people are using it on their kind of more advanced, you know, compressors, et cetera, to basically replicate what they have in the field so they can model that without actually having to go through actual scenarios in real life. It's powerful. What I've seen it done is more on that high-end equipment. It's not really being done on the you know, your average pump or your fixed equipment, for example. That's been the application I've seen. But Sean?
Yeah. No. So the other part that goes along with that is that, you know, just because something is a high-end equipment, piece of equipment, or if it's more of a critical piece of equipment based off of however you've done your criticality, right? But if you look at truly overall availability for a facility right there, you know, it's not just those pieces of equipment that can bring you down. It's other pieces that go with it as well, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times right now in the way we've traditionally done criticality analysis with it there, that gets missed a lot of times because it's a static analysis, right? You go through a consequence, you go through a probability, you know, scenario with it there, and it gets stuck with it. So now it gets tagged as a A, B, C, or D, whatever you want to do on a criticality level, without having the dynamic aspect of things are going to fail at different times and things are going to fail for different things done to them, right?
Yeah.
So what do we do with this? We all dump this into this random bucket inside of the bathtub curve with it there, which just, you know, really just kind of a catch-all for a lot of things, right? So when you really start looking about how you use data and really what the dynamics of it with it there, you start pulling it back to say, okay, what pieces of equipment do I really need to look at and what can really influence what my availability in my plant is? So going back, you know, so when you start looking at things right, the machine learnings, different things like this, aspects of it, you got to kind of step back and see where do I really need this and how can I really use this to the best advantage?
Yeah, so it's really taking the current operating condition out of that equipment, using that information as almost like a dynamic criticality, which allows us to focus a little bit more prescriptively where we need to be, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Excellent. So when organizations are going to embark upon this journey of setting up this data, getting it ready, where do they start? They got criticality, but then what? What's their roadmap or master plan look like? Is it just throw sensors on everything? Is it, you know, what do they do once they got that foundational element in place?
Sure.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, to Sean's comment earlier, I think it is important to say, hey, begin with the end in mind, right? We've seen a lot of customers get really zealous about upgrading the reliability program and doing a lot with data, but they don't anticipate, okay, at the end of this 3 years or 5 year effort, what's that going to look like to get buy-in from their people? And so I think one is define your end state first, but mm-hmm. But then once that's done, yeah, getting all your master asset data right and making sure that that's aligned in your systems, that your P&IDs are up to date, And then it's basically using all that data to start doing strategic analysis on what are the activities you need to be doing in your plant, right? So using it to drive criticality and FMEA and RCM mm-hmm. and all the risk-based studies that we're familiar with. But the risk-based studies are not genius processes, right? This is all, I mean, we all have books around this, around RCM and different flavors of RCM, but it's really making sure that's being done off of good data.
Right? Okay.
And so that's where we do a lot of that stuff at Pinnacle, but really the most of the work is around making sure the data that's supporting that analysis is correct.
All right.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's right.
All right. So we start with the end in mind, mm-hmm. work backwards, figure out what data do we need to make these decisions to support these analyses, mm-hmm. and then go from there.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Now, there's lots of talk about, you know, machine learning, mm-hmm. you know, big data. How does all this fit into what we're trying to do then?
Yeah.
Is it complementary? Is it something separate?
Yeah, great point. Machine learning is one of the very much sexy things people are talking about today in big data. And it can be valuable. Some people call it prescriptive analytics and different things. But most of what I think I've seen is that a lot of the big companies, or in small companies, they'll say, hey, we're going to have an innovation group or IT that's driving this machine learning application. And it's typically treated as kind of a science experiment. And it gets down, they might trial it at a couple plants, and then the reliability manager sees this thing, and then they do it, and it might have even successful results, but they don't know how to integrate that with their overall program. And so it kind of gets shelved, and then people are like, okay, we don't know how to carry this forward. And so it should not be isolated as its own thing, and also machine learning, I think, should be mm-hmm. done in the context of robust, you know, blocking and tackling reliability programs.
That's right.
Make sure you're managing the elemental data first, and then bring in machine learning and tie that into your overall program. And so I think, we think, hey, there's a lot of value with machine learning, but it needs to be done in the context of, hey, figure out what your critical assets are, drive really, you know, your blocking and tackling RCM strategies, and from that say, what do we need to be doing machine learning on? From that, what do we need to be real-time sensing? And then make sure that that's brought into your overall evergreening program to keep machine learning as part of your overall sustaining and reliability mm-hmm. process.
All right, so we got to go back to those basics, like you said, RCM analysis, FMEAs, understanding what is actually critical, what we should be monitoring, and not just censoring everything, feeding it up and looking for relationships, essentially, right?
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you are doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
A lot of people say, hey, we're going to censor everything. And number one, that's really expensive. And two, you start getting a lot of data that people don't know what to do with all that data. Yep. So it confuses the, hey, where do we really make good decisions?
Yep. You know, one key question goes along with that, too, is around where do you get the most value from? At the point, right? And all these tools you talk about have their place, and they have their value statement with it. But if you really get down to, I kind of got, you know, the person holding the rag out in the field, right? Stuff that the technician's going to be changing oil in this pump, the technician that's going to be working out there on the front line with the assets. If they see the value in this thing going with it there, I think you've hit a home run. Okay,
yep.
So it's around how you use each one of these tools to really get what the end result really needs to be with it there. Because back to Nate's point is that a lot of these kind of science projects with it there will go through, and they're cool, and they get a lot of analytics out there with it. Okay, but. Look, I mean, you know, again, at the end of the day, we want one result, is that we want to get availability, low cost, and we want to produce what we can of our plants.
Yep.
And really it comes down to. So really things seem where each one of you using the most value come out of that stuff is the other question you really got to ask yourself at that point. You know, I've seen a lot of things talk about, you know, in the IoT age here with the stuff around, you know, connected assessments and how do we do this? And, you know, the easiest way to go through and get information in, like, is it through a sensor? Is it through some kind of a gateway or something like this process, you know? But, you know, there's other ways you get information in with it there. You know, operator rounds. I tell you what, that's one of the most underrated places you can get information from with it there, okay? You know,
yep.
That's your front line. And operators are walking around your plant every day, and they know that place, you know, best.
Yep.
Being able to pull that information back in, that's a huge opportunity. We see a lot of clients with it there. So taking those kind of analytics in there and coupling with the machine learning, coupling with different things you're going with there, coupling from your MRO and your wear, what are you using the most out there, okay? You know, you've got out there, has your demand increased on this certain type of bearing because of things, different things or failures that's not being captured because your work order system isn't capturing because you don't have the feedback coming into your CMS. All these things come together within that place. So when you start talking about analytics and data coming into it, it's not just one thing. So it's not the shiny tool. It's all the other things that come together to really tell you what's going on.
All right, excellent. Now, one of the things I see, and I think, Nate, you mentioned it, was the fact that it becomes a science experiment for IT.
Mm-hmm.
It's artificial intelligence, machine learning. And they do it in isolation without any domain expertise, mm-hmm. I find. Is that common?
I think it's from my experience, and it's a little bit nascent, right? It's not... this hasn't been going on for too long, a few years now. Most of the projects have been like that. Okay. It's been driven by IT, or it's been driven by corporate without really getting buy-in from the plants. And therefore, yeah, there's without the buy-in, the plants don't sustain it. So there are exceptions to that. I think with any sort of early adoption, new technology, that happens most of the time, but the leaders are the ones that are getting the plants and the right people bought in from the start, and those are the ones that are really making headway in the digital space.
All right, so when they start making that headway, what are the benefits they're actually seeing then? Are they seeing improved availability, reduced costs, improved safety? Like, what are the things you guys seen out there?
Yeah, Sean can comment on this. I think a lot of it is, with the machine learning space in particular, it's taking them higher up the PF curve for their critical equipment, right? So it's saying, instead of saying, we're gonna catch it, you know, at, you know, 5 days before failure or after the fact, hey, we're gonna catch it 50 days before failure, okay, we can plan it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot cheaper to plan that. But in the overall, industrial IoT and making sure you have a lot more data, I think overall, that's the high performers are getting better. That's typically what's happening. The people that are tackling it well are already the people that have good reliability. Right?
Yeah, they so already have the foundations in place.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think another thing too is that I think a lot of people are starting to recognize some things that they weren't looking at in the past with it there. One of the things we see a lot of too is it's people over PM a lot of pieces of equipment there, you know, going out and changing oil just because you go change it. It feels right at the time, right? You know, this type of thing. So going through and have this new round of data and the right data to come inside to show you what the analytics are really telling you, I think it's bringing light to a lot of things that they really weren't looking at in the past with it there. So I think you're going to see a lot of changes in the way people look at this stuff and how they kind of view an asset, you know, and how they really care for an asset.
All right, excellent. Now, we got these benefits, but what are the challenges organizations face when they're trying to implement this stuff?
Business would be so easy if it wasn't for the people. We all know culture is typically the hardest part, right?
Yep, and, absolutely.
And that is part of the importance of beginning with the end in mind, but also with that, hey, you got to make sure you're being as strategic as you're being on the innovation side, the technology side. You have to be that strategic on the people side.
Absolutely.
And you have to say, hey, who are the people that are maybe just don't have the positions but have the influence in my plants, right? Who's the maintenance guy on the ground who really has pull with the team? You got to get those people involved in the front end and say, hey, they got to be bought in. And to be bought in, that might not be a business value case. That might be, I'm going to make your job easier.
Right.
And I'm going to show you exactly how this is going to change your job and make you safer and make you more effective in the field, right? So it's those tactical things that really, it's you have to be systematic about really thinking through and kind of mentally modeling those things on the front end of a project and anticipating how are people going to receive this and not waiting to train on the back end of the project. It's starting from the time you start thinking about a technology and getting buy-in then. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. You know, the other part with it too is around, you know, when you start really looking at a culture change aspect with it there, it's around, you know, who's going to be the point person to lead this effort with it there? And have they taken themselves and really asked the question, are you ready for this? A lot of times with it that, you know, we've seen, you know, like leads come into an organization there with stuff to say, hey, listen, we want you to lead this charge for us to put up through our reliability program. Well, that's a big effort, okay? Yep. And it takes a lot of dedication, and you got to really have the passion for it to really to go through it. So taking the minute to say, okay, am I really ready for this? And kind of get my own mindset with it. There it goes. Because, listen, go back, you know, to people, you know, they can see through you. This stuff. If you're not legit about it, and you don't really have the passion for it, then you're already losing right there at that point, right there. Okay,
yep.
But if they can see you walking around and you're talking, and all these things like this with the stuff, you know, I mean, that we always talk about walk to walk, talk to talk, and everything stuff. That's true. This stuff, you know, people see the passion, you know, they get on board because passion is contagious.
Mm-hmm.
They
want
to see everything going. So I think that's a big key right there with it as well, is after getting something kicked off the ground and going.
All right, so it's the change management stuff, the stuff most maintenance guys aren't very good with, about communicating, promoting, marketing. You know, building that buy-in and awareness, that's where we struggle, typically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So if we had a magic wand, what would be the one thing we would do differently then when we go to implement this? Is it make everyone good at change management? Is it collect the data when we're setting up the plant in the first place? What's that one thing we would do different?
Man.
That's a good one.
That is a very good question. There might be one thing. I go back to blocking and tackling, right? The most of the conversations we've had at the show today and yesterday have been guys coming up and saying, hey, that machine learning stuff is cool, digital IoT is cool, but at the end of the day, I can't get my maintenance guys just to work off the work order that they should be for this job, right? And therefore, I can't have good data at my fingertips to make good reliability decisions. And I think it's blocking and tackling, which takes good leadership at these plants to say, hey, this is what best in class looks like. That person selling it up the value chain to the business leaders and saying, good reliability is good business, but then selling that down the chain to the people that it's going to affect and saying, hey, you need to do this to keep you safer and make sure that we're more reliable. So I think it's blocking and tackling, casting that vision, getting buy-in, and not having a different flavor every month or every year, but saying, this is best-in-class reliability, this is our workflows, this is what we need to be doing, and being diligent about pressing that day after day, week after week, and not kind of shifting gears every month.
All right, excellent.
Yep, I agree. Couldn't play it better. Yep.
All right. Gentlemen, is there anything we didn't talk about in data that you want to make sure we touch on?
No, I think it's, you know, I think the other part of data goes with it around, you know, we talk about, you know, getting the right data from that point, you know, and how do you really look, how do you do some analytics on your data that you want with it there? You know, I mentioned earlier about, you know, operator rounds and process data and different things come in there with this stuff. But when you start really looking at what data is versus, I guess you can call it direct data versus indirect data, and how do you do your analytics around that with that point, you know? Lubrication analysis is a great one there with this stuff, okay? You know, it's amazing, I go out and talk to a lot of people around lubrication analysis, what that really means to like this stuff. Well, just because you had a bad lube analysis come back doesn't mean your bearings failed yet, right? It's an indirect data source telling you what's going to go on with that bearing at that point. Yep. But it's not a direct indication of what's going on with the pump right at that point. So kind of understanding how those different stratifications of the data goes through is really kind of get to a key point with it as well. So, but that's a lot of stuff we focus in on with it when we're going doing programs and kind of laying things out.
All right, excellent. Well, gentlemen, before we go, where can people find out more about you guys, Pinnacle Art, what other conferences and things you got going on? Where can people learn more about you guys?
Yeah, our website is pinnacleart.com. Welcome you go on there, search. We have a lot of good content on there. Should I give out my number?
If you want.
Hey, call me, 713-898-2730. That's my cell number. So we'll let anybody that seriously is passionate about reliability and wants to make improvements, call me. I'd love to talk.
That's it.
All right, excellent. I'll make sure to put links to Pinnacle ART, your LinkedIn profiles, all that stuff on the show notes. People can just click, get to you guys right away.
Yeah.
Make it easy to connect with you guys.
Great.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.